Welcome to the AI Learners Lounge. I'm your host, Cambria, and this is a podcast where AI meets learning and development. From exploring how AI facilitates individual learning to understanding its integration into broader organizational strategies, we tackle it all. Every episode brings fresh perspectives, innovative ideas, and actionable advice for those looking to weave AI into the fabric of the modern learning experience. Join me as we navigate the intersection of technology and human potential right here on the AI Learner Lounge. Hello, and welcome back to the AI Learner Lounge podcast for episode 35. And today we are talking about AI for learning and development or educational videos. Now, I don't do a whole lot of work in the video area, so I've asked a special guest to join us today. Can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Cambria. My name is Aaron Malik. Obviously, I am not American with that accent. I live in Perth, Western Australia. My background is in the IT space, and I've done a lot of training in the past. I used to be a software trainer for many years in a past life. Nowadays, I focus on the marketing side of the world, but I'm a specialist in video marketing and using AI for video. So that's kind of, I guess that's why I've ended up here, is the AI video side of things.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear some of your perspective on things, and I think our listeners will get a lot out of that. So thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, no problems.
So just to get started, could you share how you think generative AI video creation might be applied for learning and development?
Oh, look, there's so many places you can use it. And obviously, it depends on your specific use cases. You might be creating a training course, or another common use I've seen is people using it for like onboarding processes. You start work at a company and they do some onboarding training. I don't know about you, but I remember many years ago when I had a job that I started, that it was literally, "Hi, welcome to the company. Here's the manual. Read that." That was it. You have to figure it out for yourself, kind of thing. So I think anything video based is going to improve that experience, and then adding AI on top of it. Look, I think one of the main reasons I got into using AI video, which I didn't know existed probably just over a year ago, I've done a lot of video for my clients. And the number one problem I've always had is a struggle to get them to be willing to go on camera. Like, people get in front of a camera and they just freeze up. It's just a mind blowing. They can stand in front of a room full of people and talk for an hour, no worries. They can do sales calls in person or on phone. But stick them in front of a camera and they just freeze up because they're worried about looking bad and sounding bad. So AI for me, AI video was one way to get past that. You know, I could literally phone a client and we could then produce as much video as we want and they don't have to go on camera. And then, you know, the issue that stopped them becomes a non-issue. So I think there's a lot of advantages to it, and the technology is just going to keep getting better as time goes by. So anyone who's looked at it, like I was listening to your episode 22 just a little while ago, and you mentioned Synthesia, which is one of the products on the market. You know, that technology today is the worst it'll ever be, bottom line. So whatever your requirements for training when it comes to video, it's just going to get better and better. But sorry, that was probably a long-winded answer to a short question.
That's okay. I think a lot of that really resonates with me because I don't like to do video too much. And even just low-stake stuff like social media, I'll hit the record button and I'm like, what was I going to say? I know I had it planned out. So that can be particularly helpful for those types of situations.
And I think, look, that's a good point you raised there, that not only is the issue about, like, I'm comfortable on video, I've done it for many years, but my main challenge is forgetting exactly what I'm going to say and staying focused on it. So with AI, I literally can script it out ahead of time and just do it word perfect, as it were. You can stay focused. And it's perfect for an L&D environment where they typically are going to be scripting out the content for a lot of cases. So you could literally have the AI video clones speak exactly what you want and you stay on topic and you don't wander all over the place and get confused.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned scalability. And I think for learning and development, that's huge because we don't always have a lot of resources. So can you share a little bit about how you've used it to scale more and how we might be able to do that for learning and development too?
So I think, look, in previous times I've created training courses, for example. So I'm in the marketing space. And one of the things I've done a lot over the years is create marketing training videos for clients, you know, how to use Facebook ads or things like that. One of the problems with that kind of environment when you're creating a live video is that if anything changes in your real world application, and Facebook ads is the perfect example because they change their interface every second day, but seems like you get to find yourself in a position where you're going to have to go back and continue to update things all the time. And it becomes, you'll have to excuse my swearing here, but it becomes a real pain in the ass. And it was one of the things that slowed me down from just focusing on training. So with AI, you've got a basic, let's say a script, want a better way. If things change, you can just go back into the original video and go, okay, so I said this, this, and this. Now I need to change to say that, 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 and I might need to change maybe a picture or a background. It's much easier to change that and then just re-render the content and put it out. So that you've got updated content, it becomes a lot easier to manage it and keep it updated. So that from a scalability point, that's a big one for me. That really is a big time saver. And particularly if you've got a team of people working on stuff, you don't have to worry about, you know, if the on-camera talent that you might normally use, you don't have to worry about getting them in to reshoot things and then re-editing. You know, I've got to chop this word here and that word there and change things around. Just being able to do it all in AI or most of it in AI, definitely a huge advantage of scalability. And plus, it also means you can pump out a lot of different videos quickly and easily if you want to test different messaging or try little different modules. You know, I've done you get a question from a student, you go, oh, I didn't think about that. Oh, I might do a 2-minute answer, Q&A answer thing. You can just write the script, push it out, and it's really easy. So, huge advantage in that respect, and scalability obviously is a big part of that. It's just using your time and your resources effectively.
I think that maintenance part of it's huge. That's how we end up with so many like e-learning modules that are from 6 years ago and things totally have changed. So I think that's going to bring us a lot of opportunities.
Look, I've got tens, probably hundreds of hours of video training content on my hard drives, plural, that I've built over the years. And a lot of them are just like, I couldn't use them anymore because they're out of date or I need to modify something. And, you know, once, I think when you switch to the AI model, yeah, it's not perfect yet. It's not the same as having a real person there who can think and react and do the things you want. But as I said, the technology is going to get better and better every day. And in 6 months or a year or 2 years, it's going to be so lifelike that people are going to use it as the default rather than, I suspect, a lot of people getting on camera and doing it themselves.
Yeah, I think just that improvement in quality has been huge. So when we think back, I don't know if you're familiar with them since you're in marketing yet, but Mayer's principles of design. So one of the elements there is not to use AI-generated voices because they don't sound like human, but that was years ago. And there's been a study since then, which I'll link to in the description if I can track it down again. But it's shown that it's actually improved past that, and it probably can be used for that.
Mm. Look, I have to say something about AI voices. So I have found for myself and for my Australian clients, it's still not a great solution because the vast majority of the technology out there is, I would suspect, is trained on American accents. And so I'm still haven't found, and I've tested just about everything, I still haven't found an AI voice cloning option that works for me that sounds vague. Like I can get one that's similar to me, but it's very monotone, doesn't have my real strong accent. I remember one client I did, we cloned her voice and she came, and she's Australian, but with a strong Chinese accent. She came back sounding American. We had to request a refund on that. So yeah, if you're in the US, I think you'd be fine. Outside of the US, I would suspect watch this space. For most of my stuff, I still do a voice recording. Just grab a microphone, record, you know, write the script, record the voice, and use it that way. But look, I'm sure that will be fixed sooner rather than later.
That's something really important for us to consider, especially when what I hear a lot of is the use cases for translating videos into other languages and being mindful of how the accents might not be quite there, still involving a native speaker in that, so they can review it and be able to make sure it's where it needs to be for your learners.
Yeah, absolutely. That's I think going forward, that translation thing is going to be a big part of the technology. I'm working with, but actually I didn't even mention it. So I'm a co-host of a podcast called The Daily AI Show. So we do, amongst other things, we do consulting work for clients who want help with AI. And we're currently talking to a company in the Middle East who don't speak English as their first language. So, you know, we have to look at taking English content and then using the software to translate it to their language. But the positive we've got there is that we have a native speaker that can listen to it and tell us if it's good or bad. So from a lot of examples I've seen, it works well, but I only speak English, so I can't comment on how good the Italian, French, German, or whatever else is. So, but yeah, I mean, as an LD developer, think about the opportunities there to translate your course into a different language. That's huge. And that's where AI, I think, that'll give you a new market. You know, if you're currently in Australia or in the UK or the US, and that's where you primarily focus, by being able to do language translation, that's going to make a huge opening up for people to get into new markets.
Yeah, the translation has been so huge for me, just working and doing consulting type stuff. So I was working with someone from the Netherlands, and they had all this great information they sent over about something, and I was able to just quickly translate it into English, and there might have been things here or there, but that's when I could connect and find out what it was supposed to be when it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. So
kind of brings us all together more.
Yeah. Look, I slightly tongue-in-cheek have said this before, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. If any Star Trek fans out there, you probably know about the universal translator they have in Star Trek. Well, I think we're probably less than 5 years away for something like that, like an app that's going to be built into your phone where you can go to any country, speak in English, it'll translate to their language and vice versa. And I really think we're that close with the technology now. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. So when we talk about all these opportunities, there's always a cost associated with them. So how do we in learning and development first set parameters around making sure we're being effective with this, but then also measure the impact of generative AI and how effective AI actually is instead of bringing somebody in to record these videos? And how can we get that cost comparison?
Look, I think it comes back to, firstly, it depends on your experience with using the technology. If you're new to it, it's going to take your time to get up to speed on things. I started my first AI app, I think, was Midjourney, the graphics program. And then not long after, I got into ChatGPT. And that was probably about just over a year ago. And you don't start out being an expert at it. So you have to account for some time to play with it and experiment and see how it works. And there's obviously a cost involved in that. And, you know, for some L&D people, that might be, hey, we need to get this job done fast, in which case you've got to bring someone in or pay an external contractor to do it, whatever that's going to cost. But if you've got in-house people that are experienced enough to use the tools, then it definitely becomes a lot cheaper. You look at going and doing normal video, you know, you've got to get a camera, get the lighting, get the script, maybe a green screen, maybe a teleprompter. You've got to have a location. You've got to make sure that the noise is good. All those things take time and they all cost money. And in the reverse of that is like the AI video cloning software I use, which is tryhaygen.com. With that, literally it's like $30 US a month for 15 minutes of a video. It doesn't sound like a lot if you're building a big course, but it's still cheap. I can literally write the script out, push it into the software, and it will produce the video. So, you know, overall, the costs are generally a lot cheaper. And I think as the technology gets better, the costs will continue to come down. So, you know, look, it's difficult to give a number there, but I can definitely see that it's quicker and cheaper. Like for clients, I do marketing videos for them. In the old days, I would have to drive to them or they would have to drive to me. I'd have to get it all set up, the recordings, go back into all the editing. Anyone who's ever done any video knows that video editing is mind-numbing, tedious, and time-consuming. You know, you've got a two-minute clip, it might take you an hour or two to edit it, depending on how bad it is. Well, nowadays, I don't have to do any of that. So it saves a huge amount of time and money.
Yeah, that's helpful. I think the costs are probably going to start going down, too, as this technology evolves.
Absolutely. I mean, the classic example is probably the internet. When I first got into the internet, you know, I think it was maybe, let's say, $20 a month, but it was a really slow speed. And nowadays, for $20 or $50 a month, you get this ultra high speed. You can watch Netflix and Amazon Prime and all this stuff that you could never have done 10 or 20 years ago. As the technology gets better, the cost does come down, and it will be the same with anything AI-based. You know, ChatGPT is a baby. It's only just over a year old, and look at what it's done in 1 year. It's
I think we forget that sometimes when we're talking about what AI can't do and all these limitations without thinking about the bigger picture. And we're not just focusing on what we can do today and tomorrow in our businesses and in learning and development, but making sure we're looking at a long-term strategy and where these tools might take us.
Yeah. And look, nobody's got a crystal ball. We don't know what it's going to be like in a year or 2 years or 5 years. But, you know, even today as a tool, ChatGPT, for example, or the video software I use, TriAgent, you know, they have limitations, but they still can do probably 60, 80, maybe even 90% of the work, and then just require that human to come in over the top, refine things, tweak them, make changes, and just improve the overall product. Even now, the marketing industry in particular has been massively impacted by ChatGPT and AI, and that's only in a year. It's going to make huge changes everywhere, and it's just going to get better and better. So, like it or lump it, people, we're there now. There's no putting the genie back in the bottle, as the old saying goes.
Yeah, and with that, something that always comes up is the ethical concerns with having these voice clones. And what if I could take a video of you and go into this tool and make something without you knowing, or even if you gave me permission, without letting you review it before I release it out? So what are some considerations that we should take into account when we use it in business or for learning and development? And how can we make sure we're doing it responsibly?
Great question. And it is something that I know on the Daily AI show, we've talked about that topic a few times, and it's pretty common to hear people ask questions about it. I suppose the first thing is, let's just use video cloning, for example. If the general public didn't have access to something like TriAgent, they could still go to YouTube and pull all of your videos out off there and then figure out some way of cloning it. It's hardly something that they couldn't do now. So I guess you've got to accept the fact that there's going to be certain issues or concerns around that. Most of the companies that I am aware of in the space are taking the security and the privacy aspects pretty seriously. So I'll give an example with my video cloning. When it first started, you could, they've got a series that you can upload three clones at once, like a different location or a different look or whatever. And initially, you could just upload your two-minute training video, and 5 minutes later, it's ready to go. Now, you've got to upload it. You've got to be there live to record a consent video for it to say, you know, my name is Fred Smith, and I consent to you using my clone, blah, 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 which is a bit of a hassle for me because it means that I have to get my clients to do that instead of me being able to do it. But it shows to me that they're starting to take the privacy and security aspects more seriously. It's like anything, you know, any tool in the wrong person's hands can be used for bad. A kitchen fork, you eat food with it, or you can stab someone in the eye with it. That doesn't happen too often, but the point is that you could do it, and I don't see people banning forks for that. And I think with the AI side of things, I think probably the biggest risk long-term is that we're going to start to see people be far more skeptical about what they see and hear online and potentially offline, because they wonder, is this real or is it an AI? So if you've got a, you know, let's say a famous politician, we'll use Joe Biden as an example. If Joe Biden suddenly gets up, you see a video of Joe Biden going viral across the internet because, you know, he's done something strange or evil or nasty. And, you know, you think, is that real or is it a clone or what? You don't know. So the distrust factor is going to be huge. I think any company making AI software like voice and video and all that sort of stuff is going to have to focus a lot more on the security and the protection aspects. But is there a perfect solution? Probably not. You know, look at human beings and how long have we been around? We still kill each other and treat each other like terrible things. So, you know, look at short of wiping out the human race, you're not going to change that aspect about humanity. I think most companies in the space are probably taking it pretty seriously, and I'm sure we'll see new and improved technologies protect against it. But as a, you know, if you're in a team or you're an L&D person yourself, you just have to be careful. Don't hand your passwords out to people. That kind of stuff. That, I mean, that's obvious, but I still see people handing out passwords. Yeah, if I wanted to, I could cause major dramas for all my clients. Most of them give me their passwords, their ad account and their Gmail account and their YouTube account and all that. You know, I could go out and be a complete jerk and do all sorts of things, but I don't. That's my ethical standards. But if somebody is unethical, they're going to do it anyway. So.
It's a little reassuring hearing how the companies are doing things like that live recorded consent to try to mitigate it. And I think it's going to be a topic for a long time to come.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, they're probably already being forced to do it because it is one of, you know, aside from the Terminator aspect, you know, AI taking over and killing us all off. One of the biggest concerns people have with AI is the ability to do bad. And I would say to most people that the vast majority of us probably aren't important enough for some evil person to do something bad with AI. You know, if you're a public figure, a politician or a business person or something like that, that's a whole different ballpark. But you and I, in the overall scheme of things, we're probably not important enough for somebody to waste their time doing something like that. And so that's reassuring to some people. I don't know. Depends on how famous they are.
Or you put a target out on yourself now for those who heard that. But yeah. I can see that. And I think that transparency piece and just letting our learners know when it is an AI-generated voice or video, I think that's going to be really crucial to how we apply ethics and learning and development with AI.
Yeah. Look, I'm seeing, I think it's YouTube is going to, if they haven't already done it, I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere that they were going to put some kind of warning or something on any video content that they realized was AI, just so people know. And I've noticed with my video cloning, it was pretty subtle, but I noticed in the bottom right-hand corner is this tiny little pulsing purplish colored dot that pulses in and out. It's very subtle, but I'm pretty sure they put that in there as one way to just identify the difference between the real video and the not real video. So we will definitely see some big developments in that space. But fingers crossed, most of the big companies are taking it seriously. They're not letting you do things that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time, but I wanted to see before we wrap up, if you could just give us a tip for those getting started with AI and video for learning and development or just in general.
Oh, geez, there's so many. Look, the most obvious tip for me is just get in there and start playing with it. Treat it like a bit of an experiment, even if you're not going to use it in your mainstream production yet. But just start to become familiar with how the tools work and what you can and can't do with them. Like I think for myself, when I first started using video cloning, my very first video clone was terrible. Like I remember the instructions they said, you know, stand still, don't move, do this, don't do that. And I look back at it now and I'm like standing rigid, upright, not moving. And it looks really unrealistic. And I learned over time by just experimenting that, hey, you can just relax and move around a little bit. And some of my videos of me outside in my outdoor patio area where the wind is blowing and my hair is blowing backwards and forwards on the video. And stupid as it sounds, it adds a little bit of realism to it. And the only reason, the only way I found out with this sort of stuff was just to play with it and experiment. And that's, you know, that's a great place to start, I think. You know, everything else from there, you can sort of do research, find out more information and go from there.
Great advice. So before we close out, can you let our listeners know how they can connect with you online or where they can learn more about you and your work?
Sure. Probably two options. You can find me on LinkedIn. Just search for Erin Malloch, E-R-A-N-M-A-L-L-O-C-H. Or you can visit my main website, which is the personalbrand.agency. Other than that, I'm on Facebook as well. If you want to reach out that way, that's cool.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you all for listening to this episode of the AI Learner Lounge podcast. Please join me again next Tuesday for another episode.